is now some more, I'm kind of mixing the more theoretical parts with the more practical part, so I would like to go to a more theoretical part now to explain you about the differences in the research types. Because we have been talking about reputation measurements that were patented using certain ways to measure it, and research like the research that you will be doing that is mainly but not totally qualitative, because there are scales that you will use, so it's like a middle way of working, which is for that reason also easier to flexibly use in for different forms. So there is I did not open it. I was looking at some faces that said to me, huh? But now it's okay. Thank you for being so clear non-verbally. And the research can be either attribute-based, which means that the characteristics, the features, are pre-given. So in those cases, you ask, you give people a scale and you ask, how is your view on this matter? So surveys are always attribute-based, meaning that usually researchers have to think pretty long before they have their questionnaires ready. And rankings are also ways where they are attribute-based, because people are asked to rank something on a scale that is pre-given. Yeah? So all of these are not very open ways to do the research, as non-attribute-based interviews are, or sometimes parts of interviews or parts of surveys, parts of questionnaires, I should say, can also be non-attribute-based. The word survey is always used for something quantitative, so attribute-based. And non-attribute-based, part of the questionnaire could be non-attribute-based, as in your case, or the whole investigation could be non-attribute-based. What you see in the picture there is an example of what attribute-based research can give you, because there is on the one hand the attribute familiarity of companies, and in the other axis you find the evaluation, how positive the respondents are about that given organization. So it's clearly two different attributes, types of things that are measured, and this is used for a benchmark, as is very similar also to the results of the reputation barometer, where you get lots of such pictures out of it for different combinations of dimensions. But non-attribute-based work could be to ask open for association, where it are the respondents who voice, who choose their words. And so there, when you do such open questions, it's actually pretty simple to come up with a question, and you sometimes even feel quite foolish when you ask, what are you thinking about when I mention the name of this organization? Yeah. But actually, your real work then comes in interpreting what you hear, because one person puts it like this, another puts it like that, and you somehow still have to make a list of that, where you can say something like this, summarizing it in your words, perhaps, is said by 20 respondents, and then the numbers get lower until you, but you can't for everybody put it like one time, because you cannot report it that way. So it's then the work of the researcher in those cases comes later. So, and for the person who is a respondent, it's also pretty easy. Of course, needs to say something by his or herself, but it can be in any way the respondent wants to address it. So in that sense, it's also a very open experience for the respondent. And you now understand that when I'm measuring the reputation of a company, and I'm talking with high-end stakeholders, so important stakeholders for the company, it's already a reputation-enlarging way to give them the opportunity to phrase it the way they like, and not to treat them as a kind of kid that can only say 1, 2, 3, yeah? So the way in which you put the questions can also be more rewarding for the respondent. Also, when you ask, want to ask somebody, will you be my respondent? Then it matters how you start your questions. Because if your first question is, what is your income? Or what do you vote for? Or how old are you? For some people, is already putting them off. Whereas if you organize your questionnaire so that some things you don't ask, but you can see them yourself, male, female, or whatever you would like to be, we're not checking if that's really true. Yeah. So that could be especially ethics, that you do not have to ask and put them into boxes, but that you can say, well, in the end, but you don't need to ask because you can fill that in afterwards. And sometimes for age categories that's quite obvious, and sometimes you still need to ask, but then it's also nicer if you ask that at the end. So I personally never understand when students make a questionnaire and the first question is, what is your age or something? I would say, well, I'm too busy. I'm not motivated to answer that. Whereas when you would start a question by, well, something about the topic, yeah? So don't put them in the beginning. I know that a lot of surveys do that, but just think that you are doing your own public relations too with the respondent. You're asking somebody time. And also, I don't want you to ask these general questions like age, etc., only for the two groups that you want to compare, which is research ethics. You only ask demographic information that you really need for your investigation. You don't ask a whole list of demographics if that is a waste for the respondent to ask because you will not use it. So if I find out that you ask, let's say, 10 different demographics, which is definitely not what I'm after, then I expect that you will split up all tables for 10 demographics because you have to use what you unleash. Okay, non-attribute-based methods. So why do we use these open methods? Well, a very well-known one is natural grouping. And there we ask people to split groups of objects in two piles. So there could be cards for different brands, for example, or for different organizations. And we then ask if people can split up the pile, one pile of cards and say, what relates to them, to the organization, or what belongs together, actually. It's very short instruction. So here is a pile of cards, and there could be, for example, organizations on it, but more often this is done, of course, for products, for example, for perfumes that you can hardly talk about because it is so difficult to make that concrete, how you see them. I have used it for car brands, for example. So split them up in any way you like. And we have had this as an experiment in class, but unfortunately, because of mold problems, I lost the cards. I was not allowed to take them with me. So, but it was a nice experiment. And people split them up, the cars, for example. And then it was not attribute-based. So it was not me who said you have to talk about cars as if they use too much fuel, if they have too high emissions or too low emissions. Now, it was their choice to perhaps, if it is meaningful for consumers to split the cars into colors, fine with me, yeah? So the whole idea of splitting up a pile of cards is very open. So that is called natural grouping. So ask people to split groups, and then, of course, they continue. So then they have half of the cards, and then please split them up again in a different way. And then you hear how respondents talk about car brands or how respondents think and address flagrances, but also about companies. You can do the same, and you can find out how people talk about different companies. If they bring up the point of responsible behavior or not at all, large and small, so what is relevant for people? So that is, I think, the nice thing for that. I don't ask you to use that in your investigation, but I think you should know that it is often done for products, but can also be applied to organizations. And then there is the photo sort method, but I have a picture coming up for that. Choose the pictures that fit your feeling about this organization, for example, associated emotions we get. And an example of that, I put it out, I'm thinking about energy in the break. So photosort method, this is the name for this method. And it's about, again, it uses patented cards. And this is just an overview of cartoon figures that tell about the same thing. But usually we use facial expressions. Again, lost in a period with mold and very difficult to get your hands on if you have left the industry. But I think this tells it. So you could have happy Donald Ducks. And so if you ask, what do you... which picture fits your feeling about this organization? So why do we do these things? Because it becomes easier for people than to pick one of these and to then tell you why than when you would ask only verbally, describe your emotion for, yeah? So this is a way to help respondents talk and to not fill it in yourself, but to kind of let them tell you why. But always the why question here is more important than actually which picture they take. Yeah. So actually you should analyze the whys, and it doesn't matter so much how many people chose which picture, even though you're tempted to also give that, of course. Well, what students used earlier, but I say that you do not need to use that now, because now we have the four blocks, and this was like more like this extra that the book gives you. But I still think it's nice to know that in earlier courses, students chose to come up with types of trees. And this was for a supermarket chain. And if it was interesting to know if people associated the supermarket chain with a firm tree or with something that is blowing with the winds anywhere it goes, for example. But again, the question why mentioned, because sometimes they chose a picture, but they interpreted it totally different. So it was not enough to just see that. What you can use are these semantic differentials. And here I took a picture of Kotler, so that you see that also Kotler is not only investigating brand image, but has also investigated corporate images of, in this case, schools. But he used a 7-point scale, and I would like you to simply use a 5-point scale. Now, I always get students that ask me, why can we also leave out the middle? And sometimes there is a reason for that. But there should be a very strong reason to leave out the middle. Because who are we as researchers to forbid people that they might have a balanced point of view that is not so clearly this or that? Of course, when you have votes inside an organization, maybe you want people to really choose. But I see no reason to limit the freedom of the respondent by forcefully taking out the middle position. I mean, if everybody goes there, it's a pity that your results are not so clear. But if that is the result, then we'll just have to work with it. Yeah? So a 5-point scale, and there is a middle. And if we now look at this, you see two opposites. It's about a school, and the school has, according to Kotler, inferior teachers, superior teachers, social development emphasis or more academic, dated or modern facilities, yes? So this is what we call a semantic differential with two opposites. But if you want to have a more easy word, we also say simply snake diagram. But a snake diagram can also be made by statements. So you will make two snake diagrams, one for the alternative positions, as is really about perceptions, and another, I will later show you an example, for statements, and they are both snakes. Yeah? And each snake line is a connection of a position on a scale. So it forms a little snake. And why do we do that? Because we work with managers, and managers know this technique, so they can quickly interpret it. They have no trouble in it. So we don't make a new world for them, but we talk in their terms, and this is very often used. So why should we do it differently in communications? No, of course, we follow that routine. What do we compare here? So it could be that there are three. Actually, it is different, but you don't know the book. Haha, I do. But I could just say that it's three different groups that are compared. You only need to compare two. And I don't need an average. I told you I hate averages. They don't add anything. So you're comparing two groups. So I will have two snake lines and not more. Yeah? Unless you start to ask too many demographics. Then I want many, many snakes. But you will not dare to do that anymore now. Yeah? So two snakes for two groups that you compare. And here, for example, let's hope, and I of course know that this is not the case, but let's hope that it's not the teachers inside this organization or school that are A and are positive. And let's hope it is not the parents that are C or the children that are B, because then it would be really not good news for this particular school. Yeah, I think he compared different schools, actually. But we are comparing different groups of respondents. Yeah. So, which perception characteristics are relevant for your topic? And I will notice when you have a few answers. We don't need many, Sarah and Ina. But as soon as you think you can collect something, let's get some tempo in the work now, because after eating something we might slow down, and it's, for people who watch the recordings, is awful. It's already awful that we break so often, but I hope that at home people will also do the same assignment and also are thinking about their own, because only then of course you can move fast forward, but that's the best. Let's get some tempo in this. So for your topic, which perception characteristics, like the example that I just showed you, I can put it back on the screen if that helps. Yeah, I'll do that. Oh yeah, but one thing more. I do not want you to do what Kotler does. Kotler averages the results to a full point. But in your case, because we only have few data, so do not round it off. So if your average for a characteristic is 3.2, give us 3.2 and not make it 3, because otherwise we will see only less. So don't round off, because this is the average of one group and we compare it with the average result of the other group. But if that average is 3.2, for example, don't give me 3. Because that takes out maybe any interesting difference that we have between the two snakes. Maybe then they both become 3. Yeah? Okay, but come up with some. And then we will quickly compare so that there are some different examples. Maybe one, each group can give one example. And then you just move on. Okay. Buzzing.
So maybe everyone has come up at least one. And for instance, here, could you say what is your organization and what did you come up with?
We chose Posti, the Finnish mail office, that has had pretty severe problems within the past years. We have efficient, inefficient, reliable, unreliable as our examples.
Did you get that? It was very fast, but you said some very good things. Okay, you're fast also. Good.
So it was unreliable, reliable, and what was this?
Efficient,
inefficient.
Could you give ideas to others too?
Yeah, maybe this group could give a few examples.
Okay, we didn't discuss it so much, but we were thinking, Stora Enso was our case, so we were thinking about the responsibility as an employer, so responsible employer, is it unresponsible in English, employer, and also the ethical issues, so also ethical, unethical, so those were the examples.
Good, and what about here?
Well, we have this case of Särkänniemi, which is an amusement park. So what we had so far was like thinking about questions around eco-friendliness or how diverse the park is and the age groups, if it's like for everyone or just for kids, or is it safe or unsafe or things like that.
Okay, that's very good.
Let's take one more group. Here, could you?
Is it difficult?
Well, we haven't really decided the company yet, or what we're going to discuss about, but we thought about taking a sustainable or environmental kind of aspect to it. So kind of like, do they think that they are doing, or are they environmentally sustainable, and are they trustworthy or not? Kind of these aspects.
Okay, there is quite very good examples. Does anyone have any others that haven't already come up? Obviously not. Maybe we can continue.
Maybe we can conclude then that some of the examples given are kind of general examples that could also inspire other groups. And there were also some very specific ones that really related to the case organization as such and maybe are not so relevant for other case organizations. I would advise you to take this first snake series of questions that actually form one snake, one combination of snakes, that series of questions, to take that a little broader than just to focus on one particular crisis. So really look a bit broader on the identity of the organization as you can find it on the website. Which characteristics do they use? What do you find in some media reports? Maybe some critical matters that are not part of the short list of the identity features on the website. Maybe some things that you expect to find. So take it a little broader for this group. The statements are fine that they have more focus, but this should be a bit wider still. Thank you. We will come back to you very soon, because what's behind this? Another question. So which two groups would you compare? And if you already have the answer to that, continue with the question, what kind of hypothesis would you make? Because I would like you to make a hypothesis. And then the problem is always that the hypothesis should really be about the image that you expect to find. So it should be something like, we expect
to find that group X will have a different corporate image than group I or group Z. And then you could also have a reason why you probably expect that. Because, for example, in the case of an older reputation problem, like Stora Enso might have, although there are also these closures, so then it's different. But then you might want to compare age groups. And then, of course, you could give an explanation that the book says that that the image is defined, among other things, as being based on experiences. And the younger age group has less experiences with these negative events. So that explains why your hypothesis is that the image of the younger group is more positive than the image of the older group. So it would be lovely if you could even have a reason for that relates to the literature or the definition of corporate image or what you heard about psychology that explains why you expect it. And then don't get any problem about, it doesn't matter if the hypothesis is not proven, because to a researcher it is just as interesting, sometimes even more interesting, to find that your hypothesis is not proven. Because then that makes you thinking, and maybe you find out that these stereotypes do not actually exist in that way, and that could learn us a lot. So I don't care if you have an hypothesis that's proven or that it's not proven. I just would like to see that your assumptions become clear so that you can also address those critically if needed. But it helps you in the research to have a hypothesis and to have it. So if you think, well, I can say why this is the case, and then it's not the case. And then you start to think maybe about theory again. Why isn't that the case? Yeah. So then we have like a double learning curve. So please make clear by buzzing which two groups you compare and what is then your hypothesis. I will not take too long for this one either, because you can continue this also after class. Yeah? Go ahead. It depends on you when you feel they're ready to give you an answer. But not too late.
Okay, maybe we can continue and find some groups to compare. How about you? Did you find any other group? Yeah, go ahead. Where that came from? Our topic is going to be the Finlayson case, so we're obviously going to interview men and women, and then probably people from different age groups, I think. Okay, there was also another group that had the same case, so maybe you could think if you want to take the same or another perspective to it.
And how about this group here? Which groups would you compare, and Also, if you have any hypothesis, that would be interesting to hear too.
Okay, so we are comparing, our case is Marimekko, and we are comparing the employees and the general public, their opinions, if we can get the employees to the interviews. And we think maybe the employees see Marimekko as more international company than Finnish public.
Do you include current employees or also people, because there's a lot of students that were employee but are not anymore. Do you include those or can you find enough employees?
We are not really sure yet. This is just an idea, so we will see.
Then this is also an idea for you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, does that help us enough, you think? Okay. I would like to make it a little bit more difficult now, because you now understand the idea of the snakes. When I do in such investigations for assignment providers, then I often have a long list of many different dimensions or characteristics to measure. So I get long, each aspect I split up in a lot of different elements. So for each aspect or dimension, I have a lot of different semantic differentials already. So then I'm always looking for a different way to show an overview of the different aspects. And I don't ask you to use it, but I want to make sure that if you see this in practice, if you outsource work, you could get snakes as a result, but maybe these agencies also would like to provide you a different picture for the total overview of many more elements, many more aspects of each element. Yeah? So for those, I use this cobweb. And the cobweb is just as often used in the literature as the snake. But the snake is they're both easy to understand for board members, so that you can use, in fact, for those reasons, both. The nice thing about this one is that when I get a new assignment, I ask the top board also what they expect or what they would like to get as a result. And then I get very high scores, because they would like, if they are positive, if these are positive elements. So what you see here actually is the same axis. It walks until, it runs until the middle, and then you get another axis, and the next. So it is the same axis from a low to a high score. That is just combined. So do you understand how this picture is built? Okay. So if I have high scores before I start to give them my results, when the assignment has started, so they might say, we expect or we want to be seen so positive. Yeah. So I can color the inside of this form with a light color. Yeah. And then when I return to the board, I tell them what real is found and what really people think about the organization, which is usually smaller. And then I color that dark. So I get a dark blot in the middle for the real results and a lighter blot that shows how they would have liked to see it. And now you suddenly link with the gap analysis. So I'm always interested in gaps, because if matters are not how you would like them to be, but there is a gap between a small ink blot and the broader blot, that's where you get the budget to do a campaign or whatever. Yeah? So, and there it becomes also interesting to ask, how can we make that small blot bigger? So what do we have to do? And then the question again is, how your, what I called the gap analysis last time, was this a problem that should be tackled with external communication, or do we need to help the company with an internal change process before we can actually reach better images. So I think now you can all connect it. Yeah? I see some. Yeah. Okay, so you don't need to use the cobweb as long as you are not baffled by it in a meeting and that you are like, oh yeah, normal business. I know what this is. I can interpret it. A new question. Reputation is a social construct. It is co-created in interaction between people. My question to you is now, why do some crisis situations and some rumors affect reputation more than others? We talked a little bit about that last time, but now I want to focus on some travel fast on the web and what kind of crisis situations and rumors, what kind of issues travel fast. What makes an issue, I could put it broad, it's not just the characteristics of the issue, but what do you think makes an issue travel fast? In what situations does it go viral, maybe even? So talk with your neighbor and then you can collect some ideas left and right so that together we get a more full picture. And then I will tell you of an investigation, but that's only one case. So the question to you is more general. What in general do you expect makes a topic travel fast on the web if it's related to, of course, a reputation problem? Okay, go ahead. Some work to do.
So maybe we could start. Here. If the company has already been involved in a crisis, so it goes faster because people remember.
previous problem.
And here another comment.
I think that if it's something that many people can relate with, it travels faster. Let's say if something bad, but it doesn't like touch everyone. They like read the news. They think, okay, that's bad. But if like many people can relate with that, so then it goes much faster.
Okay, if you could pass this to the middle, maybe the group in the middle could answer.
Yeah, we were also just commenting, you know, if it's like a immediate, you know, like that it needs immediate attention. We also had the, you know, the how widely it is like affected. Is it affected to everyone or only a certain group? And oh yeah, right. If there's like visual like testimonials or that we know that is a truth. And not just a random news item that somebody has created. Something truth, you know, truthful.
You said something about a medium. How did you mean that? Can you clarify?
Excuse me, what?
Media. You talked about media also.
No, just if there's something visual and testimonials that, you know, like people can easily relate to and understand the issue. Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah.
You said it can spread more fast if it's true, but also this time we have a lot of fake news that spread all around very fast. I think also that if it's something that people would like to happen, or it's the same, it relates to their own thoughts or opinions, then it can spread fast too.
Yeah, I just came up with the idea if the media is always equal to all the crises. Like, is there some kind of crisis that media is like more effective, or that was just something that came up to my mind.
Can you say that again? Sorry, I missed it, Sarah.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. But I think media plays like a crucial effect there too. But not to your comment. But maybe the background could tell something.
Well, we thought that it has to be something easy enough to, easy and simple that you can, for example, make a joke about something. But if you have some issue that there's lots of caution, well,
complex.
If it's quite complex that you can't, for example, write in a tweet, so then it's more likely that people don't comment on that.
That last one was kind of funny, because I would also expect that when it is too complex to put in a short tweet, of course, I can't bring in anything against that. That's good thinking. But very often people, the complexity of the topic is usually not impeding any reactions of people. For example, if you know hardly anything about tomatoes, I mentioned last time that there was an investigation about knowledge about genetically modified foods, and there people hardly understood anything, but it did not limit their wish or their practice to have a lot of opinions about it. So it could be that even though the topic is highly complex, that it's still so that people put it in a very short tweet and that it could be quite provocative even. And so maybe complexity is not a prohibition, but I think you meant it more positively, that something that is simple, also simple to connect with, to feel connected with, and to express that, that of course makes it easier to do that. Yeah. But there is another.
Meddle with the production chain, so that things like if there's a crisis in, for example, South America with like trade unions and Coca-Cola, if you're familiar with the case, so that if someone tweets about, okay, Coca-Cola buys some resources from this firm and this firm has lots of problems, people aren't not likely to tweet about it or make memes about it, if you know.
Good point.
If that makes sense, yeah. So it's easier if someone at Coca-Cola, like for example in the management, makes a huge mistake, it's easier to tweet about that rather than something about South America, which isn't interesting to anyone, unfortunately.
Yeah. Far from my bed, they can say that then. Okay, so if there was a previous problem, I think that already contributes, makes it more simple. It is, there is more knowledge about it, so in that sense it links to the last thing you said. Easy to relate to, yeah. That I was just having an association with these dolphins. There's a group that's looking into that park that has dolphins. So some topics are easy to relate to. And then the wide effect, then of course it is more discussed at more places, I can understand that too. The visual elements, that was reminding me of the television pictures or the camera pictures that were taken by the Greenpeace crew at the moment that Shell sent their water cannons to get people away from the Brandspar platform. And that were such beautiful pictures that the effect of that was that was called priming, that you repeatedly have these visuals again and again, which has a big impact on the reputation of the actors involved. So I thought that was also a very nice thing to say. Of course, if it fits expectations or clashes expectations, that is also in the same line as relating to it. So it comes close in that way. A current issue, well, if you heard about it already a lot. So a lot, this is actually something that I would say was quite central in your replies. Well, let us now take a look what we found when we did some case studies about it. Thank you. I'm now referring to work of Boyang Zhang, who recently defended his dissertation. It was in June. You can find the dissertation. It starts also about understanding, blah, blah. And it's about the web. It's very interesting. So this particular case study, he made several ones, actually seven articles. But this is one part of one article, where real-time monitoring was done of Twitter accounts and also to compare with a content analysis of newspaper articles about how quickly an issue travels on the web and how quickly it travels when you compare social media with news media. And the two cases, actually, that he in this case compared was first the crew of Greenpeace, a Greenpeace vessel becoming arrested and entering a Russian jail. And you may still remember that case. When was it? Not so long ago. 2 years ago, I would guess. But maybe my guesswork is not. But you can look it up if you want to know. At the same time, there was also a shooting incident in Washington. And we thought they were different enough cases to actually see something about what was spreading faster and maybe also why. So in the first case, it was about the crew of the Greenpeace vessel Arctic Sunrise being arrested. And now I thought I had a wonderfully nice explanation here, but I have the conclusions of the research here. So let's just use my own memory that will work also. So in the case of the Greenpeace vessel, much happened actually at a place where a lot of people had no entrance to it, because it happened in Russia and it wasn't visible to many people that would like to tweet. So a lot was not known, and that explains why the dark line of the tweets showing the volume of the tweets over time. So the dark line starts to grow later because individual people, you and me tweeting, started later because people did not know what happened there. So they needed the news media to tell them what happened. And of course, the news media also needed the Greenpeace organization and their press releases to also find out about what happened. But those did not lead to so many tweets, not so quickly, because it was really the news media that went for it first. So that was one of the few instances where we saw a difference, a time difference. Because nowadays, actually, it is so that there hardly is a time lag. Because normally, what is tweeted is immediately read by news media, is also, if it's interesting in their eyes, immediately part of the news. And as both channels involve online communication, online news media, there is not hardly any time lag in between. But still, let's take a look at the other. So what is more can more be said about the Greenpeace case? Well, you might note that it was the black line. I can point it out, but it's not visible on the recordings. That's why I tend not to do that and just talk about it. But you can see that the black line is higher after a number of days than the dotted line. So the line of the tweet is getting higher at some point than the news media attention indicated. And that is at the moment that Greenpeace organized events throughout, well, all kinds of countries, that in squares, in places, people got together, or there was all kinds of things happening to make it known that the crew of the Arctic Sunrise was in jail. So they did everything they could to give it more attention, as of course Amnesty International, for example, also tries to get a lot of attention for things that might otherwise go unnoticed in some prison somewhere. Yeah. So you see that these secondary events, that they caused a lot of tweets. So in that sense, they were successful events that led to a lot of attention, because I think NGOs would primarily like to get attention for topics that they feel are important in their view. So here you see the combination of the communications for an NGO in this case, trying to enlarge an issue. Whereas in other cases, there might be an issue for Volkswagen, but there the intention of the Volkswagen communication people was not to enlarge the issue. They were trying to give information so that it would not get too hot. Yeah? So here you see the difference that in some cases, and also regular companies, could benefit from fueling an issue. If that is, for example, about lowering administration that is costing them just money and make it very slow to changing laws. So it's not so that companies only try to lower the attention for issues. That would be very defensive. No, at other moments, they also would like to change something in society, just like NGOs, and gain attention for a topic. So don't get a too black and white picture there here. But I think it's a good example that here Greenpeace was trying to fuel the debate and doing so quite successfully. I think that's all we can say here about the Greenpeace cause. But it becomes clearer the difference when we look at the other case. Because for the shooting incident in Washington, it was an emergency in that sense that a woman was so unhappy, totally depressed and didn't see any use in her life anymore that she passed the security fences near the White House. You don't do that without a reason because you know they can shoot you for it because they feel that you're a big threat at that moment. So that was what she did. And so this was a crisis that had a peak that was smaller because it was condensed in time. And after a while, people also stopped tweeting about it because it was a clear case that, because in the beginning, they were afraid that it was a terrorist case. So it brought more tweets. And then after a while, they had this unfortunate situation of that woman, and the tweets dropped pretty quickly. But what was making this initial peak of the tweets high, the dotted line, is higher than the... So what is that? Well, that is the eyewitnesses. And one of you earlier talked about visuals. So eyewitness accounts, and maybe pictures of it, are one of the ways that a crisis goes viral or becomes a crisis. Yeah? In this case, there was already a crisis for this woman, of course. And then there was a second peak. But you're getting a little bit tired, because if this would have been earlier in this class, you would have already asked me, but what is that second black frequency, higher frequency there then? Well, then it became known that a child of her was in the back seat. The child survived, but that was causing major tweeting, like, oh, people who were really worried about the kid, and because the woman was shot. But the car went on a little bit longer. The kid was okay and was, of course, taken into care. So you can understand that when something like this happened years ago, probably nobody would know that this had happened. Of course, they would also have taken care that the kid would have people who would take care of it. But here, it was a public matter because many people that didn't know the woman, that weren't even living in Washington, hadn't seen it, were still wondering, is somebody taking care of this baby? So you understand through the example of this case that current cases in communication channels in the social media get very different than they would have been, maybe no attention at all, outside the Washington Post, perhaps. Yeah? So you see that the eyewitness make a big difference, that the distance makes a big difference. That was a bit similar. And we, after this, made a model where we tried to make sense of the different factors and which factors explain that it goes viral or not goes viral. You can check the article or the dissertation if you want to find out more about that. But so characteristics of the issue, of the type of message, of the actors involved, if there were eyewitnesses, if it's an NGO, who is behind it, who maybe has a lot of resources to organize events and then fuel the case, or if it's a large corporation which also has resources, or a smaller organization that doesn't. So all these elements were outlined, and you can find them in that article. But I think you basically had... But the eyewitnesses are really important. And also, I think this underlines your idea, if it's easy to relate to. It may be about dolphins, but here it was in the second instance, it was the kid. The first instance for the shooting case, it was, are we in danger? Is somebody in danger? What is happening here? So that is always the first in such a case. And later, I should also say, we also compared different issues. So at the beginning, there is a lot of concern for victims. And at the end of a case, there are more reputation issues. Did the police, did they do it well enough in the Utoya case? Initially, the cars of the police were showered with flowers. Later, they were angry at the police that they didn't get faster to the island Utoya because for many holiday-like reasons, they couldn't get the right type of boat, and then the whole matter got way more critical and even very black-natured. So reputation is the result of past issue discourse, as you so nicely already immediately answered a moment ago. But it is also the starting point for a new issue discourse. So if I let you measure reputation, that means that it is like a basis line. So you can look at the issue at stake, or a potential crisis, or something that has been a crisis and is still lingering on. But there also is some kind of baseline. And what companies are always wondering about is it worth to spend money on that baseline, on that building up of credibility? Or is nowadays the world getting so turbulent that it's okay to just go from one crisis to the next and not build that basis? Well, of course, mainly scholars say that that basis is still important, very important over time, so worthwhile. The basis level and the foundation for future discourse. This is just an example that students made, and this is this method that you don't need to use, but the students used the pictures because they had seen the... At that time, I had the patented card still, and they found something similar on the web. And so these facial expressions were used to ask how people felt related to Shell after there had been several incidences that related to Shell. At the moment, they have a very good reputation, I can say. They also made these a card, and that is actually why I show this, because if you ask people questions, so next class you're asked to bring your draft questionnaire with you. Every single one of you should bring a print, because we're going to do some intervision next time. So yeah, we need everyone to have a print with him or with her. So on that print you can put the questions one after another, but actually when you do the interviews, and if you don't use some other online method that some people have been talking about as an exception, which is okay too. But if you focus on real talks, then it is very hard for the respondents to answer this if they haven't got it. So you can put one series. I earlier talked about a series of questions, and this is the series of questions with that will deliver your snake diagram with the semantic differential. It is the name that Kotler uses for it, semantic differential, the two alternatives. So the perception ones, the other with the opinions. This is the perception ones. So you can give them, you can also put a line if you want, but this is an example of how students for Shell made this rather broadly. And you can see that it doesn't become a nice snake if it isn't at least these five questions. Yeah? And then, do you agree with the following statements? So these were not the perception questions, but this is an example of too few, actually. Too few statements, because three is not a nice snake. Yeah, it's a very short one. We want larger snakes to see a little more. So these are the statements, and these are evaluations, not perceptions. So we had impressions, we had perceptions, this is about opinions, and then there are preferences, but I don't think I have a picture of that one. So that gives you some inspiration. You can also look them up again in the slides on Optima. But which statements suit your topic? So the statements relate to the to the case crisis. So this helps you if you use some time still here. Let's not use too much time again, because we also don't want to end too late, but I think this is quite important help for yourself if you could start it. Go buzzing.
Okay, maybe we could start. What kind of statements do you think that fit to your case? Do you have any? No? What about this group?
Well, our subject is the online presence of police in Finland, and especially regarding hate speech. So we thought that one useful statement to make would be that... one would be, is the online presence... The online presence of police is important, and another would be that hate speech online has gone down with the police presence. These are not properly worded yet. A work in progress.
Well, a good attempt. Very interesting topic. Anybody else that already has an idea for a statement? Would it help if I gave you more time, or is this just something that needs sleeping on it? Or doing something else after class, perhaps, or whatever. Well, how do you feel about that? Yeah?
Should we explicitly mention the issue here or not?
We're
the group with the dolphins.
Yeah, you can mention the issue here. So not so much for the earlier questions, but for this set, you can mention the issue itself and give it some focus. Yeah, and if you are afraid that not everybody knows that particular issue, because that is also a possibility, you can... from your back pocket, as if you were not prepared at all, draw up a card and show them some basic information to help their memory, because they probably heard about the case, but maybe they just come from the library or the doctors and they have something like, what is this about? The police or whatever. So, and maybe you have something that, especially if it's a less known case, that will help. So then they see the name of the... So something visual, I would suggest. But there could also be reason to then tell them a few lines. But it would be nice if they could also see it. So we work in these interviews with cards. So, yeah? So the idea of a set of questions on a card. But if your open first question does not need to be in a card. But these statements, they could be on the card. And then you write down if it is 2 or 4 or 5. It could be plastified card, strong card, that has all the statements already. And then you only have to ask, what do you think about statement number 1? What's your view on that? Do you agree? And how much do you agree? And then your work is also to ask why. So don't only put 4, but if somebody gives a very unexpected answer that you think, well, I would expect it 4, considering all the other questions or things this person has said, it's a very strange answer, then of course you ask why, if it is a face-to-face situation, or if it is something on Skype, you can also then ask why. Yeah, so you write down the answers. So you will have a block note, something hard that you can write on, and that person you can give the cards to clarify. Thank you, I have a new card for you. Yeah, very professional. Back to the statements. Some people are showing signs of tiredness, which is not amazing at this point. More ideas for statements? Or yes? I'm taking over what went much better without me, actually. I'll sit down and shut up.
Yeah, so my company was Nestle, and we're looking into the water privatization issue, and one of the statements could be like two statements, but one could be, first, is water a grocery product? And after that, obviously, at least I think it is, but the next question is water a human right? And it's tricky because water is a grocery product, but it's also a human right. But like in Nestle, they were arguing that, well, the CEO at the time, he said, Peter Brabeck, he said that it shouldn't be a human right because it is a grocery product. But that's why if you first ask, like, is it a grocery product, most people would probably agree it is. But then on the other hand, it's still, like, it still is a human right.
I would suggest that after next class that you also try out some of these questions on, I don't know if you have a sister or anything like it, or a brother or whatever, because it could be that that person doesn't understand the question, is water a grocery product, and that that person says, well, it depends where you live. If you live in Africa, it is not maybe a grocery, well, it depends on the city or the place in Africa, of course, it's gross, too simple. The questions should also not be like trick questions, even though I find them very clever. But so if the first question is leading to making the second question awkward, I mean, that's not really... and it should really be a statement. So it should be, I feel that, or water is considered as, or I consider water a human right, or... Yeah, so if you rephrase them a little, anyhow, it has taste enough, which is important, that it's tasty. Yeah.
You recommend us to use the same or obviously rephrase questions or statements, or in other words, state something and use kind of the opposite, for example, find out, like, I don't know if you get what I'm saying. Okay, for example, first statement would be cell is environmentally friendly, and later on it would be cell is not environmentally friendly.
I don't think that it's necessary here to kind of have check questions where you doubt that the reviewer is still wide awake, yeah. the respondent, and then you kind of check it. No, that is really not needed here because it's an oral interview and you will find out if they answer truthfully or, well, I don't know exactly, but you will have some indications. So there is no need for check questions. There are maybe other courses that invite you to use those for surveys, but usually not for questionnaires that are oral. So that is not necessary. And this is not the best example ever. It is a group earlier that did a reasonable, but it's also not enough, 3. Yeah. But it's good that you ask. Yeah. You really do need the mic for those that have the recording and look at home and then only see me sitting here and no sound, which is dreadful, of course.
So anyway, I found your topic earlier super interesting about the water. Is it a grocery product or is it a human right? And if you're like really specifying into this, you know, question, is it possible that in the questionnaire you can ask people also about incidents of other companies? Like Fiji, the water, you know, the water bottles, they also had an incident in Fiji where they took the water away from the locals that actually used it. So they took their right for the water away. And also, I know that Israel considered water as a human right. So what they invented with the government and water companies, that they are taking the seawater and being able to purify with these machines that they invented, that water is now available for everyone, that the water, like tap water, is safe to drink. But still, there is also companies that are selling it in the supermarkets, which is interesting. So I really find it interesting, you know. So my question is, can you use those like examples to demonstrate for the people what you're meaning, you know? Mm. Is it more the Fiji case, or is it more the human rights that how Israel did it?
Are there other people that have a reaction to that than me, perhaps?
No, but a question is like, can you use that in a questionnaire to give like examples so that people can form their opinions based on those?
I would not like to say just no, but but let's see.
I think it might be quite difficult to find or present those examples in such an objective way that it doesn't lead the interviewee on.
Much better answer than no. Thank you. Yeah. It also should be not too complicated in this sense. You're getting a first taste of this kind of questionnaires in this course. You can't do everything in it. So it has to be really focused on the comparison that you want to make and your hypothesis, and you're collecting what is mostly important to answer that hypothesis. So don't try to do the world, but if this is exactly what you're after, then you have a new question, but I cannot answer that. It's only you who can. How can you, in an accessible way, open up that point that is in itself very complex, but you should open it up so that it becomes possible. And that is why I said then you have to test it maybe among some people around you if they get what the question is really aiming at. So if you were able to make it accessible. Poo! Okay. Shall we go to the rounding off? Thank you very much. So to take home, I would say, the next question rather than do it here. But of course, you could still talk about it here because I'm actually a few minutes ahead of the schedule, but it's always considered very polite to do that. So I would like to score some points for that also. But you can, of course, hang on a bit longer and already talk a bit with your neighbors about, because your questionnaire, what will it look like? It has these four elements. Stand, I can't see some of you otherwise. It has these four elements, and I advise you to simply use only one open question for the impressions part. The question, what are you thinking of when I mention the name? to you. Yeah, or another way to put it, but it's difficult to phrase it in a different way. So something like that. What are you thinking of when I mention the name? So for most topics that works, and that already gives you a lot of writing, if you can make them talk, as you are now so excellently doing, but it will be another difficult question to do that with respondents, to get them talking. But make them feel comfortable, use eye contact in the right way. Well, what is the right way? You will start to think about such matters also. And then you have this one card where I would suggest, but of course, this is the tablet, I wanted to say. This is the template. That's the word that I was looking for. It's getting late for me too. This is the template. And you can, maybe you want to make a difference, which is okay too. But you could be naughty. I said that last time. Yeah. So, but the template simply is to keep you on track. There's one open question for impressions. Five skill questions. Of course, you can make it seven if you think, oh, yeah. With the two alternatives, definitely. Because otherwise, Kotler would say, what are you doing here? Yeah? He's not looking. Five statements. Again, might be seven, yeah, if that helps you. Because you need to get to your point. So you have to think. And actually, maybe this whole assignment is about doing a lot of thinking, while actually the reporting of it is pretty fast. But in each word that you will report, actually is some kind of load behind it. So here, that is the same too. I advise five statements. Don't take less if you want to add one or two, okay? And there, the crisis or the aspects that you really want to go into the issues can become more clear. The skill questions, the first skill questions, the next are also skill questions, but the semantic differential skill questions. So they are more broad. They are not only about being responsible or not responsible. Yeah. And then you end with one open question. And I think that A and D, you don't need to give a card for. So you need a card for the set B and for the set C. Yeah. And if you feel that your topic is maybe not known by people, or you find that out by your little test, it's good that you have this like extra card. Maybe nice to see this about my topic. You have to think how you tell that. And then you can maybe continue more. And if people really don't know nothing, you can also say, well, I'll take another interview. I'll take this from the list. Okay, if you still, but I can't believe that. I mean, you've been working very well today. So you are probably quite clear about where we're headed. But maybe, especially those people that have overlapping lectures or other important personal matters, to them I would certainly advise to already take a look at the slide template for how you report the answers later on. If that doesn't make clear what we're heading for, then I don't know it. So that should help those that are not here present, or maybe those of you that are curious about that and already want to take a look at that. I might refer to that again in our next meeting. So what was the idea of today? You did not see that one. Today's class, you better understand what public perceptions of an organization mean, and I think we're all the time adding more layers and more depth into that one. And we now talked about what are these perceptions through how we measure them, which is actually informative to understand what reputation really is. So the data gained mean nothing, as a summary, without truly being interested in stakeholder views. And when you do the interviews, the interviewees or the respondents will immediately note if you are really interested or not really interested at all. So it's the differences between the stakeholder groups rather than the average picture that makes it really useful. And that's why you're tasting a slice of this by comparing two groups. And maybe they will surprise you. Maybe they will not prove your hypothesis. But that might be even more interesting. And today we made a start with many different questionnaires. And in order to do some intervision next time, it doesn't have to be perfect. But even if it's only partial, bring it with you next time so that we can exchange those and that you can get comments of somebody of another team for your questionnaire. So I hope you liked this lecture and that you have a lot to take home, also in a positive sense, that your brain got rich associations today. And we meet again on Monday afternoon. Thank you for your attention.